for taking a moment to just check in with yourself, where you are in this process, this journey of reflection and contemplation. There can be quite a few words sometimes, and words are useful and important, but equally important is just the being in contact with where we are. And we may or may not have words for that, but just letting yourself know and feel and experience fully what it's like for you. We've been engaging and reflecting in ways to offer ourselves the opportunity to come a little closer to what this territory that we describe as death may represent for us, may offer to us, may demand of us. There's quite a lot more, and some of that we'll be exploring tomorrow. But just for wherever you are right now, just noticing, checking in. I'd like to just, in a sense, go back to, but in a sense not, because I didn't actually read them all out, but just to share with you the Buddha's suggestion in terms of five subjects for frequent recollection. Sometimes for daily recollection or reflection, we might say. And this is what we've been reflecting on and recollecting. I am of the nature to age. Seeing aging is this part of this territory. I have not gone beyond aging. I am of the nature to sicken. I have not gone beyond sickness. I am of the nature to die. I have not gone beyond dying. All that is mine, beloved and pleasing, will become otherwise, will become separated from me. I'm just going to read that again, that phrase. I think I might have used it already, but just there's a whole piece of the territory that comes in here. The death is the final confirmation of, but doesn't necessarily wait until then. All that is mine, beloved and pleasing, will become otherwise, will become separated from me. So change and death, very closely related, and things that we care for, people that we care for, situations that we care for, change, disappear. And there's a whole realm of the experience of loss, of sorrow and grief, that's an important part of the territory, and tomorrow that's one of the things I'd like to speak about some more. But just coming to that point here this evening, or this afternoon, I'm aware that talking about death in a certain way, in the way I have today, hasn't really addressed what may be one's experience of loss, whether immediate and direct, in relationship to the death of others that we maybe have experienced or that. And I kind of just want to name that, because it may be that for some of you here, that's part of what's very alive for you. And maybe that's been part of what you've touched into in the reflections. But maybe it's not so much about who is going to die, but who already has. Just really to respect that, if that's part of what's there. And as I said, I'd like to speak some more about that tomorrow. And as someone also mentioned, getting ahead of myself here. So that's the first four subjects for frequent recollection. And just noticing where they land. And the fifth one I want to also share, which just to round out that area of reflection, is the I'm the owner of my karma, which, as you may know, means action. Not as it's commonly used in our culture as the results, it's action. We are the owner of our actions. And born of these actions, heir to these actions, abide supported by these actions. Whatever karma, whatever actions I shall do, for good or for ill, of that I will be the heir. So there's this way in which in the Buddha's teaching we understand that our experience arises conditioned by, coloured by, and ultimately informed by how we live our life, what we emphasize, what we support. And in recognizing this, the, again, support for looking at and seeing what's important, what feels wholesome, what contributes to well-being and what doesn't. So it's not about a moral position in relationship to action, but really looking at its effect. And this is one of the, you know, the contemplations born of seeing our mortality. It's like, what makes sense for how to live my life? That we come back to this, that we consider this, and that in terms of Dharma teaching, the process of kind of handling the impact of our actions, of allowing ourselves to see where, as I said, we may have regret or things are incomplete, that there's a real imperative to address places in our life, people in our life, situations in our life. And that what we, in a way, don't attend to, from the point of view of the Buddha's teachings, we, in a way, carry it with us. In whatever way or form that makes sense to you. And I'm not going to endeavor to give a detailed teaching on that particular theme of karma here. But what it is, the intentions and the motivations that we found our life in, are really what makes the greatest difference to our life. We cannot control our circumstances, but how we respond to them, what we do in the situations and with the choices that we're given. Even though we're not given necessarily the situations or the choices we might wish, but with the ones that we're given, what we do with this. I think this is very much how we respect the preciousness and the mystery of our life, of what it means to be something, someone, we could say, that for now is alive and has the possibility of awake, of being awake, but not forever. But not forever. So tomorrow I also want to explore how the dimension of awakening and freedom is very much connected to this territory of reflecting upon death. And the process of dying from the perspective of our identification with the body and with the mind, and the freedom that is possible when really allowing those things to die in a way before we die. That part of the invitation of death is to look and see what we really truly can hold on to and what we truly need to let go of, while that's still something that's possible for us. But perhaps coming, what feels like it comes in terms of this coming to the completion, or towards the completion of the day for today, for me is again just coming back to that sense of what makes sense and how we live our lives, given that we live only for a short while, and others too, only for a short while we're here. So repeat again Stephen Levine's phrase, love was the only rational act of a lifetime. So again, I just want to invite you to just look around. See who's here. These people. We haven't been engaging and interacting in the ordinary social ways. We've engaged in some ways that are kind of unusual. Perhaps challenging. And I'd just like to make a little space at this time and the ending of the day. If there's anything anyone would like to say of how it's been, or if there's something you feel you need or would like to ask, don't have so much time, because in terms of the workshop, it, as I said, it's really oriented around the whole weekend, and so perhaps before. Okay, I was not sure how I was going to do this, and I thought I'll wait until see how we got there. So there's a couple of things I then want to say. For those of you who are not coming back tomorrow, because you are, and I'm trusting you're absolutely not able to come back, because that was the framework. It's not just a casual choice you're making, I trust that. In a way, it's complete insofar as this is where we are with it, and there are some more things that could be useful. I'd invite and encourage you to perhaps listen to the recordings from tomorrow, which will be up on the website at some point, or in fact I gave a similar workshop a couple of years ago. They'll already be there, I expect, so you could it will be different and not so different in certain ways, so you might find that you can make the time and would be interested to do that. But I hope it's been useful for you, and we'll have some more time for discussion tomorrow around what has or maybe hasn't been useful. But what I also just want to name and just lead you, which I imagine again you're aware of, and that with the tradition here for the support of the retreats and the teaching, that as a teacher at London Insight, I don't receive any payment from them beyond the covering of my travel expenses, and so there's an opportunity to give support in the form of offerings, which I'm very grateful for, and that dana, that expression of generosity, is what I rely on and receive as my only source of livelihood, and so I'm very grateful and appreciative of the support that comes. And for those of you who are leaving at the end of the day, not returning tomorrow, I wish you very well. And I hope this has been truly beneficial for you. Likewise, those of you who aren't, but I'll get the chance to say that to you tomorrow as well. I don't know who you are amongst you in one sense or the other. But yes, it's really my wish and hope that this has been of benefit. And I wasn't sure about the wisdom of having people just come to half of it, but people seem to want to, and London Insight felt that was what they wanted to be able to offer. So that's how we've done it, and I hope it's worked in that regard. So I think that's the pieces I just wanted to name. But I also want to say, for those of you who made the intention and the commitment to stay and come tomorrow, to really stay with that. It can sometimes be one goes and then thinks, oh, what shall I do tomorrow? Certainly I feel that the commitment and the support from everyone is actually really important for everybody. This isn't something one would choose to do casually, and I'm very aware of inviting you to go into territory which I wouldn't at all casually do with anybody in terms of what we've been turning towards. So if there are things that over the evening or the morning before you come back that kind of feel like they need some attention, there'll be some time for that tomorrow, as well as continuing with the reflection and the exploration together. So, is there anything that someone and anyone would like to ask about or to share of your experience in being here, whether you're here just for today or, as most of you, for the 2 days? Anything that you're wondering about or that's arising?
So I find that when I can use the reflective words for myself, so I too live when they die, then there's not really much going on. It doesn't really feel resistant or anything. It's more just like there's nothing strong there. Whereas if I create something in my mind, so like say if I put myself on my deathbed and my wife is there, then this creates kind of feelings of loss and sadness for her. And so I guess I've been a bit unsure about how much it's healthy for me to be creating something, because I find there's a difference between just kind of dropping the phrases in and that creation. And so
so a good question. Did people hear? Okay, so there's the recognition that the using of the phrase that I've suggested, I too will one day die, or I too will die, didn't seem to have a very strong emotional resonance or impact, although it's not that I'm hearing you saying that it seems pointless to be using it. It's not that it always does have a strong response. And it's something in itself quite useful just as a training, just as a practice. It's not that it has to every time feel like this vital encounter with the, you know, imminent demise of one's existence. That would probably not be realistic. And yet it might be by having practice, it's something that one just remembers in situations that help us find the response that's maybe more skillful than what might otherwise be a reaction. Don Juan spoke of, the accursed pettiness of human beings who have forgotten that fact. Yeah? And it's kind of hard language, pettiness or accursed, but it kind of expresses that sense of, like, we might realize ourselves of, oh gosh, that's not always who I would wish to be at play. So there's that. And then experimenting to see, because sometimes the language becomes, it's lost any resonant meaning for us because we've become familiar with it, or because in some way we're kind of holding it in a certain position. Okay, so for myself, I found it really useful to reflect on and contemplate, yes, my own death, what that would be like, and to bring some of what would it be to actually say goodbye to my wife. What would it be if she was dying and I was actually saying goodbye to her? What would that be like? To let myself, because in a way that phrase, all that is beloved, precious and dear to me, that I will be parted from, it's like, that's what it means. Yeah? And then it kind of, that makes it a bit more real in a certain way. So what are those things, beloved, dear or precious to me, that I will be parted from? Because the teaching and the reflection isn't just about the fact of the moment of death or the ending of the existence of this animated body in the way that we know it, but it is about the whole process of the relinquishing of connections, relationships, and the death that happens when someone we care for dies. Something in us, there's some death way in which we experience our own death. That's been my experience and understanding, and that's to do with how we know ourselves, and some in that to do with identities. So again, the thing is to see, is it useful? If it seems somehow traumatic, it might not be useful. But if it's challenging, it's sort of like, it's almost, we allow ourselves to meet some of the responses in the present moment to what will one day need to be met. And then it's sometimes, it seems by that one can handle it in the moment more skillfully when it's actual. There's less shock, there's less disbelief, there's less... It doesn't mean there isn't going to be grief. I don't imagine for a moment that contemplating my death or my wife's death will take the grief out of when that should be so. But the shock that makes it hard to actually see and feel and respond, it seems to me that's less. But one can't know until one is there. And of course one will never know what it would have been if one hadn't done that, so there's never any definitive answer. If it seems useful. If not, it's okay to put it down. I'm just aware that I was speaking facing that way. Did you hear some of that? Any of it? Some of it? Okay, good. I don't think I could quite manage repeating.
Actually, I couldn't quite hear.
I wondered, how would you respond to somebody who's actually quite angry and resentful about the fact that we have to age and die and about change in general?
There's different ways that someone can be angry. Did you hear how to respond to someone who's angry about this? And it's interesting because bringing up the topic easily evokes anger from some people, and that's part of why the topic gets put away. For some it's scary, for other it brings anger. And there's a way in which we... essentially it's expressing a failure to comprehend the first noble truth. That there is suffering, there is unsatisfactoriness, that in a sense things are the way they are. So often anger is on top of fear and pain. It's a kind of an attempt to push, say it shouldn't be this way because it hurts and I don't like things that hurt. So far as it's possible to see that and respond with compassion to the suffering, that's probably going to be helpful. But in one sense it's also, I think, expressing an incomprehensibleness about it. It's like, you know, how and why should it be this way? It doesn't make sense, you know? And that classic thing in a theistic framework, well, if God loves us all, why does he let this happen? Or, you know, if the universe is benevolent, how come there's all this, you know, horrible things that happen in the world? Or whatever position one might take. If it's someone who you feel is open to discussion, then it's fine to say, okay, so, you know, what's the basis for your anger? What's going on here? But sometimes people are just angry and that's how they are. So it really, you know, it's going to depend on whether you feel like you have a relationship with where you can really talk with them about it. I don't know, is it a specific situation you're referring to or is it just a general question?
That's my mom. She gets very angry and resentful and goes, oh, it's so unfair. And exactly what you just say, if God loves us, why does he let us die? And you know, from an atheistic point of view, then like it's always put like we are the children of God, and
okay,
then
so in that
we wouldn't let our children die, and that kind of thing. And she's also very resentful about getting old, and she's getting ugly, and she's I feel very sad, and you were saying that all the time.
Yeah, so there's a lot of loss there. You know, we'd be really probably not that happy if God didn't let anybody die. No, I don't believe in God myself in terms of how that relationship to a kind of a choice-making entity is expressed. You know, it would be really crowded, just for starters. It would be really crowded. If everybody in your mum's house was still there who'd ever lived there, you know, your mum might not want to be there. Now, I'm not saying that kind of response is necessarily helpful, but there is a kind of a... And this is, again, part of more the territory. There is something in us which it doesn't make sense to, because we don't understand what it is that lives. Because we don't understand what it is that lives, we can't understand how it is that this dies and why it is that this dies. And the question that, in a way, precedes the issues with death is actually questions to do with what does it mean to be alive, which are mostly not being asked by someone who's arguing with death. What does it mean to be alive? What is it that's alive beyond our conceiving of it? So in that context, I think compassion, so far as you can, but challenging also sometimes, you know, challenging the view. It's like, who says it shouldn't be? And it's interesting, isn't it, with children and maybe with angry adults, we want to comfort them. There's a natural compassion in that, and yet there's something compassionate in not shielding people from the truth of this. And that's the irony, in a way, of how we deal with it culturally. The outcome you're describing for your mother is exactly the effect of a denial culture that says it can't go that way unless something's gone wrong. The truth is that it always goes that way and nothing's gone wrong. It just doesn't feel good. And the association we make between something that feels painful, uncomfortable or threatening and something being wrong is a fundamental error, which runs through the whole sort of pleasure-seeking nature of our culture and most culture. And that spiritual culture doesn't make that association. That what is skillful and wholesome and beneficial is not just what is pleasant. What is unskillful, unwholesome, unbeneficial is not simply things that are unpleasant. I have some medicine at the moment. It's really unpleasant. It's supposed to be good for me. Some herbal tincture that's really bitter that I've been using just the last couple of days. And it's a very interesting thing. With medicine, we know. Now, why couldn't my medicine taste good? I could get angry about that, couldn't I? But that's the nature of the medicine, often. And that takes some maturity to see that actually death is actually part of our medicine. But not everyone's ready to hear that. Aging is part of our medicine. And there's a kind of a... it's a kind of a fierce compassion that it's expressing. Compassion isn't only tender and soft. So I don't know how much use that is in being with your mother, but
Compassion is lonely. Did I hear you say?
I didn't say compassion was lonely. I said sometimes it's fierce.
Yeah. Your fierce one is turned around that way. I mean,
yes. No. I'm sorry. I'm aware that. I kind of actually asked to set the hall up this way so as to not feel like there was people right at the far end, but who knows if it would have been easier to speak and be heard if you were all in a narrow line and I was speaking at you in the same direction. Sorry, I can't remember exactly the phrase there.
I work at a council or hospice, and I work with people. I've been working with some clients, ladies that have lost their husbands, and it was a sudden shock to them. They died very quickly. And that's one of the things, the anger. Why did they take him? He was such a good man. He's only just retired. And that lack of preparation, I think.
So it's not an unusual response to the fact of one's own or to someone else's. And, you know, again, anger is a way of actually handling grief, is what it's about. That it's usually a protective mechanism to not be overwhelmed by the grief. The part of grief is there's a vulnerability at losing, not being able to prevent the loss. And anger kind of somehow comes over that with a sense of, as if it makes one powerful again in the face of something that actually one has no power over.
Not hopelessness. Yeah. I feel that hopelessness because they haven't been prepared for it.
Yeah. So this is part of our own preparation. Yeah. We can't actually do another's preparation for them. Yeah. Behind, did you have your... Yeah.
You spoke earlier this morning about the sense that we sometimes have when we think about death, of the preciousness of life and the reality of the experience of being alive. And I've certainly had that but it, for me, fairly quickly just sort of dissipates. I get caught up in everyday life and I go back to the sort of comfort and pleasure largely. And the realizations that I had of what was really important to me, or seemed at the time to be really important to me, have just kind of faded away. And I'm struggling with a way of trying to keep that realization of the preciousness of life and what's important to me alive.
Well, I think that's very common and familiar. As I said, the messages around us are not supporting us to a large extent, and the messages within us equally aren't supporting that. So, you know, actually taking time on a daily basis to reflect on the fact that, you know, I will die. To take a moment to contemplate that those around me who I love, they will die. To really just and, you know, that question of death is certain, the time of death is uncertain. What is most important in this circumstance? We have to keep coming back to that question. And like any practice, we have to work with it. We have to keep coming back. So it's not a magic sort of thing in that regard. But, you know, maybe you want to write it down and or print it out of your computer and pin it on the wall, and every week rip it off and make another version of it in a different colour and put it somewhere else, because a week is about as long as we can use something usefully, I find, as a reminder. So just, I think, one more person and then we'll need to finish.
Just about fear of compassion. A very dear relative of mine, older relative, who had been a very benevolent force in my life, was diagnosed with leukemia, and she took a few months to die. And she absolutely refused to hear about it. And when people in the hospital would come, and, you know, various counsellors tried to come and, you know, prepare her, help her to prepare her, she would just send them away with the most kind of, with enormous anger and hatred. Mm-hmm. And she just didn't want to see them. She was very rude to them, and I realised that, you know, the compassionate attitude for me wasn't to push my desire for, you know, to make her face the truth on her, but quite the opposite, to accept her denial and just be with her. You know?
Yeah, yeah. There's no blueprint for how this plays out and what's appropriate with someone. And, you know, to be able to acknowledge the very real fear for people, particularly if one has not spent much time contemplating it, it may be a level that's beyond what they can handle.
I guess I was shocked because she was such an intelligent woman. But,
it's an interesting word, isn't it? Intelligence.
Yes.
We
I really didn't
are
react like that.
Endowed with remarkable intellectual facilities or faculties as human beings. But we don't always apply them or employ them in the service of wisdom. Yeah, thank you. So I'd like to finish here in the sense of also just with this practice, if you feel you'd like to carry it home and just, again, that pebble in the pond sort of thing of just dropping the phrase in now and then, seeing what feels useful in terms of, oh, yes, remembering, I too am going to die, or you too are going to die when we are on public transport or arriving home to family or friends or all that. We don't have to articulate it. They might ask you what has been going on in your day and you might want to share it with them. If that feels appropriate, that may be fine. And if it doesn't feel appropriate, that also can be fine. But be respectful and sensitive to yourself or with yourself if you feel in any way that it's stirred you or impacted you in a way that's still kind of working for you. And we'll begin again tomorrow at 10 o'clock, or please arrive a little before that so we can settle for 10 again as we did today. And Andrea, did you want to say anything at this time? I don't think, no, it's more, if there's anything practical. So, go safely and well, and I'll see most of you tomorrow, and those others, if we should meet again.